So first off, we'll start out with a five. Five being the hermit. The downside is again the hermit. The upside is the explainer. Their motto is to be all-knowing. They're closed off and protected, have a fear of feeling. Like fours, they're probably much more connected with the people they're not with. If you're involved with a four, don't expect initiation, initiative taking, continual physical nearness, or total surrender. The limelight is really intolerable for a four. Let me read some things, some real common statements. I'm saying four, I'm sorry, five, the hermit. The five common statements are, I tend to keep my feelings to myself. I hold on to what I have and gather items I might need to use someday. I don't know how to engage in small talk very well. Intellectually, I like to synthesize and put together different ideas. I go blank when I'm embarrassed or when someone asks how I feel right now. I need much private time and space. I tend to let others take the initiative. I often sit back and observe other people rather than getting involved. I tend to be something of a loner. I seem to be more silent than most others. People often ask me what I'm thinking. I have trouble reaching out or asking for what I need. If an issue comes up, I like to first work it out by myself, then go discuss it with others. Asserting myself is very difficult. I try to solve my problems by thinking. I like to put things in perspective, to step back and take everything in. If I leave anything out, I excuse myself of being so simplistic or naive. I tend to be stingy with my time, money, and self. I really hate it when I don't get my money's worth. When I'm upset with myself or others, I frequently think of myself or them in terms of fools, idiots, stupid, etc. I have a very soft tone of voice, and people often have to ask me to speak up. This irritates me. I tend to be more a taker than a giver. I have one, the five that I know fairly well, I sometimes accuse him of lurking. He comes into a room and lurks. He'll stand over in the corner and observe. He doesn't participate, he lurks. I get this cartoon, I have a running cartoon in my head usually. And this particular person, I think of, you know, Snoopy and Peanuts, mm-hmm. when he's playing the vulture and he kind of hangs over the doghouse and observes. that is what I think of when I think of observers. Observers are notoriously misers, either psychically, emotionally, or financially. Howard Hughes would be a notorious five. At the same time, Thomas Merton is a five, but he is an evolved five. He has taken his five and moved on it, and not, he's used it as a gift, not as a curse. That's the secret for all of these. Fives have always found it hard to find their solitude. Famous fives are the owl, Greta Garbo, Mary, the mother of Jesus. Their challenge is to take in only what is needed and share it with the external world. But the challenge is to share it. They're notorious for taking it in and absorbing it and knowing it. But it's scary to share. Trust level is a little iffy. They're fearful of what others may take or want. There's just not enough to go around, folks. Like I said, to be is to be all-knowing. withdrawal, thinking, isolation, detach, and observe. Some famous stories, not famous stories, but some stories that have been shared about, that fives have shared. It happens under pressure of not wanting to be seen. If I can't get away or distract myself with art books on the coffee table, then there's always blending into the room, removing my presence so that no one knows I'm there. I've been able to go into a wall so well that a good friend who might come looking for me can walk right past without finding me there. Going into the wall works best if you've got a drink or a cracker in your hand and can mix into the general atmosphere. But the main thing is to deflect all of your attention behind yourself until you know you can't be seen. From that perspective, things look a lot more interesting. You're watching a room full of partying grotesques walking around like the bar scene in Star Wars or some other weird alien flick.
Oh dear. This picture rings to mind.
My idea of safety was to unhook my feelings before they got hold of me. I could always manage by myself, so why let things get to the point of jealousy and betrayal? So the idea was to never pick up enough cards to get caught into a game. 4 years ago, after almost 10 years of seeing each other on a 3-times-a-week basis, my girlfriend announced that her biological clock was running out and that she would leave me to find someone else unless we married and started a family. Remember, they've been seeing each other for 10 years now.
Well, would she automatically be a giver? I mean,
not necessarily. Basically, it sounds like a woman who's probably in her mid-30s wants to have a family.
But her type there,
I see what you say, because she's so willing to wait. Good point. I would think so. Could very well be. Or nine. A nine would be somebody that would stay not ambivalent, but willing to go with the flow until it comes to a breaking point where her needs are finally coming out. Anyway, she would leave me to find someone else unless we married and started a family. I started to miss her even when I was alone. I couldn't marry her. I couldn't let her go. I finally agreed because it looked like I came. I would lose something either way. In the months before the baby came, I panicked. I didn't know if I could take the constant interruptions and the demands on time. About a month after the birth, I realized that I had changed. The baby would cry and I would just go and pick him up rather than fighting myself because I wanted him out of the room. But my feelings did not hook. I managed to stay feeling whatever it was at the time rather than disengaging and holding out until I could be alone. So it sounds like he overcame, I mean, he was literally forced into changing. It seems like usually that's the story. We're forced. We never do these things willingly. It's only when there's no alternatives and we look up. One more story here. Being unprepared is frightening. I always get myself filled in about the details of a dinner date and who's going to be there. Then I view myself going back through my part, what's on the bill of fare, and the background of who's being invited. I usually get it down so well that I'm not really at home when the time comes to live it out. I teach ancient languages at the local university. It was both exciting and frightening at the beginning, but as soon as I got used to the material in the classes, I found myself detaching mentally, often to the point where I could be located somewhere above and behind myself, watching myself deliver my talk. It would take something totally unexpected, like a student suddenly yelling fire, to get back to knowing that I was really being seen by 20 people in a class. When I've shifted out, the feeling is that my real self is standing outside and above it all, watching my proper professional self being amusing or intelligent or whatever I've rehearsed him to be. There is a real irritation at the predictability of it all, like wishing that someone would notice that I'm not where I seem to be, or that someone would be stunningly bright and ask me a question that would interrupt the monotony of observing myself like a bystander who's watching someone else's life. The history of fives, a lot of them have been really majorly abused as children. And it's a coping mechanism. All of these are coping mechanisms. But a lot of times, fives I've had some pretty rough things that they've had to deal with, and that's been the way that's worked, and so that's what they continue on with. So that is the five. The six is consider the devil's advocate. So, the dryness of Holden is getting to me. There, I've just been talking too much all week. Not just here. The five, sixes, and sevens, like I said, fright or fear is the emotion that they deal with. They identify with head and thinking. They're all definitely thinkers. Like the five goes totally inward with all their thinking. Their whole focus is finding security. That is their main objective in life, is to find security. Where the two, three, and four, that was the giver, the performer, and the romantic, are their goal is relationship. And where the eight, nine, and one, you just went blank, thank you, is peace. They're looking for tranquility. They want peace. The six's motto is to be responsible. We have here your ideal community member. Follows all the rules. Never questions the rules until they come to a point where the rules no longer agree with their inner standards. And then they go through major turmoil. Authority is authority. They are the stabilizers. They are the team members. But they have a continuous search for authority. They can identify the pecking order in a group. They are also the ones that will be closest to paranoia. Suspicion is their game. They have a tremendous fear of retribution. Overcompensating for fear, sometimes they may become your motorcycle gang or a KKK, Ku Klux Klan. But if in that case, they're with a crowd, they're not by themselves, probably. Famous sixes would be your shy deer or the wolf. And the wolf is pretty timid unless it's in a pack. Timothy, who was the compadre to Paul. Woody Allen. Oscar Romero would be our evolved six.
How important is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. I think so. Mm-hmm. Because he had such a hard time in the monastery. I mean, he really wanted it to be the ultimate for him, and it was only when it wasn't that things started happening.
I'm sure it was suspicious during the Peasants' War. It's just in a frenzy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The challenge for a six is to becoming able to trust and develop confidence in themselves. You see, there's that showing of that evolving, of taking hold of his own authority, acknowledging his own authority. Okay, where's my fireplace? I'll just put it out so nicely. Okay, the six of statements that are pretty normal for them is, I'm basically a middle-of-the-road person. Loyalty to a group is very important for me. I find it very difficult to go against what authority says. Before making a decision, I get additional information to make sure I'm prepared. I take a long time to make up my mind because I need to explore the options fully. I often wonder if I'm brave enough to do what must be done. I'm often plagued by doubt. I like to be very sure before acting. Without strict laws, it's hard to tell what people might do. I often tend to operate out of a sense of duty and responsibility. I like having limits in which to work. I seem to sense danger and threat more than others do. I tend to take sides and be concerned about whose side people are on. I tend to be aware of and sensitive to contradictions. I prefer to have things scheduled rather than open-ended. Frequently, I find myself evaluating others in terms of whether they are a threat to me or not. Prudence is a very important virtue for me. I constantly seem to be working against or challenging my fears. I seem to be concerned about defending myself or my position more than other people are. I often fantasize myself in some kind of hero role or position. I lived with a six for a while. I've done several community type living. And when we were all moving in together, this person drove me crazy. In the fact that wanted to know what the rules were going to be in this household. Or which drawer are we supposed to put the silverware in? Well, whichever drawer you want them in. Well, which drawer are they supposed to go in? Go put it in the top drawer. Well, which shelf do the glasses go on? Just where do glasses go? Well, which you know, it was no authority of their own. It was.
Make a decision.
Yes, make a decision. Even if it's wrong, it's okay.
They need someone else to make the decision.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But then when the decisions were made, they wanted to push against them. They were at the point where they no longer wanted authority, but didn't have the courage to step out on their own. And it was an interesting 6 weeks when I finally decided it just wasn't going to work and we needed to find a new housemate. And they agreed. Here's some other stories of sixes. It's hard for me to work around people I don't know. I've waitressed since high school and I'm still plagued by the feel of eyes boring into my back. It's worst when I have to draw beer at the bar. The customers pass by one and I'm wondering what they think about me. If I raise my head to look at the faces, I'm gone. Each of them seems to be thinking something or holding back what they really want to say. I have to tell myself that it's okay, that these people are not mad at me, that they are not really thinking badly of me. But I have gotten so pulled off by what I see in them that I've lost track of what I'm doing and the beer spills, or I forget to center the glass under the tap. My father was the kind of man that didn't know whether to laugh, that you didn't know whether to laugh or to duck. If you laugh when you should have ducked, then you did that only once. I learned to read him when I was young, one eye on my homework and the other eye on his mood on the other side of the door. If it was going badly on his side of the door, then I had an escape hatch. I'd go out my window and across the fire escapes to the roof of the next apartment building. I'd wind up doing my homework on the roof, wondering if he'd be asleep before I got home. Here's another one. I had three sisters and was the first boy. My parents were both highly competitive, strong people with a great many expectations for their first son. I was also my mother's dearest. So when anybody did anything that did not meet expectations, a lot of fury went down her lightning rod, which was me. So I went to an Ivy League college and, needless to say, saw some of the same punitive characteristics in the U.S. government that I saw in my parents. My family was very conservative. At most, second-generation Jewish immigrants were. And so my mother was horrified to discover that one of the first causes that I took up was the Sexual Freedom League on campus.
Oh, dear.
If someone had said at the time that I was just trying to get my parents uptight, I would, of course, have disagreed. But with a little maturing, I can see that some of that was true. I've recently gone back to grad school in economics, and I have to say that I still hold my radical views, hopefully with a great deal of the knee-jerking rebellion taken out of my opinions. I say that a lot of sixes work in law. They're either on one side or the other. They're either bucking it or they're trying to, they're law enforcement or even a lot of times lawyers and attorneys. So, aha! I have always hated the misuse of power. My experiences with lawless people has made me aware of the extent that humans will go in order to degrade one another. I've often been afraid of retaliation when I arrest and when I testify. And even if the defendant isn't out for revenge, there's still the fact that I'm hired to go into a courtroom and testify as a witness, where I have to handle cross-examination by vicious lawyers who want to smear my credibility. I get very scared beforehand, as if I'm the one going on trial. But the moment that I'm sworn in, there's a kind of crystal clear moment where the shakes vanish, and then I'm on my way. The six that I was telling you about that was part of our household for a while, his father was away from home a lot. And he was supposed to be the man of the house when things were gone. And when his dad came home, if there was anything that wasn't the way that he had screwed up while they were gone, he usually got whacked. It was usually either with a belt or with a piece of lattice work. So he really learned the rules, learned them well. It was really interesting. Okay, the seven is the person who externalizes their fear and absolutely avoids fear at all costs. They are the eternal optimists. They're curious. They leave all options open, avoid commitment, avoid pain. There's no restraint on what feels good to the point of abuse. If a little tastes good, a lot's going to taste a lot better. Works with garlic. Again, basically, their craving security. Their motto is to be cheerful. They are smaller than the world, and so they really need to take care of themselves. They're generalists. They always see the connections between a lot of different avenues of thing. And I'm finding that as much as I'm a giver, there's a real strong part of me that's a seven. In the generalist area, I'd like to study comparative religions and seeing the connections between them all. Even seeing the connections between psychology and religions, and I can just go on forever on it. They're able to maintain a good smokescreen usually, and their power tool is charm. Avoid pain by planning ahead, fun things ahead, and they can justify and rationalize just about anything that they want to do. Their challenge in life to evolve or to move out of this, the challenge that they have to overcome is learning to use level-headed moderation and accepting pain. Here are some statements of the sevens. I seem to be less suspicious of people and their motives than other people are. There are very few things in life which I can't enjoy. Things always work out for the best. I wish other people were more lighthearted about things. I like other people to see me as happy. I usually look on the bright side of things and don't look for the negative side of life. I like almost everyone I meet. I like to tell stories. I like to think of myself as a childlike, playful person. People say I'm often the life of the party. I like to consider the cosmic ramifications of events, the universal importance of everything that happens. Boy, that one hits home. My theory is, if something is good, more is better. I don't think it's good to be sad for too long. I like to make things nice. I like to savor life. I tend to be very enthusiastic about the future. I like to cheer people up. Most of the time, I avoid getting into real heavy issues. I tend to jump from one thing to another rather than to go into anything in depth. I remember my childhood as happy. Every community needs the internal optimist. When they have evolved, they are our celebrators. But until then, just don't give them too much responsibility.
They will lightheartedly forget to do it.
Or convince you it doesn't matter.
Yeah, convince you it doesn't matter, right. No problem.
Some habitual preoccupations of a seven is they need to maintain high levels of excitement, many activities, many interesting things to do, wanting to stay on emotional highs. Okay. Okay, some stories on sevens, stories that sevens have told. I thought a lot about being a seven and why that point speaks to me. When I first saw a panel of sevens tell their stories, I could relate to everything except that business about being afraid. I just don't see myself that way. But then I remembered a time when I got lost on the way home from a new school, knowing my mom was going to cream me for showing up late and being really terrified of what would happen when she got hold of me. And then I ran into some kids playing soccer and I just played until it got dark. So mom called the police when it got to be supper time and they came to pick me up. I remember myself riding home in the cop car just prepping because I was so scared. And when I started looking at the lights reflecting on the back window and I remembered the soccer game and I went right back there internally. I knew that no matter what she did to me that I could just stay in my mind and play soccer until whatever it was would be over and I would have survived. I loved both my parents and had a typical kind of country life. Nobody hurt me. I had a lot of love and support, and the only complaint I had was that I had to bicycle 3 miles to get to see my friends. I used to tell myself stories when I was alone, and I didn't much like to be told what I had to do. I realized that I could outthink my father when I was in about sixth grade. I loved him, but I knew I could think faster. I got him to agree to anything I wanted by first editing out all the items that he'd disapprove of, and then pushing for a version of what he wanted that had as many loopholes as possible. I have a friend that's a seven, and this is the one that reminded me of her. I really look forward to the Sunday paper pink section. It has the listings of the week's things to do. She's basically our social director of a group that we hang out together with. It has the listing of the week's things to do. There is a whole week of stuff laid out, a 4-star movie, a 10-star meal. Mm-hmm. It's as important to me as my cookie stash. Wow. You want to know where there's something sweet to do. The cookies are hidden in the bottom drawer of my desk at work, and the pink section is in there too. I've got two more. You could be telling me about some new system you're studying. Let's say it's Zen. So while you're going into details of the philosophy, certain points in which you say remind me of similar ideas in other systems that you know nothing about. My interest in Zen is going to be how it fits with, let's say, marathon running, the Enneagram, and golf. What you say about Zen lights up little bulbs for me about 6 or 7 other interests of mine. So of course I agree with you, but I'm not committed to what you say. What I'm committed to are the points in your description of Zen that concur with my other interests, and I will fit what you say about Zen into a comprehensive system of my own. That way I can agree with you and at the same time hold other options open. Okay, this will be the last one. My clue to my own narcissism is when I started to look down on a friend. It takes on quite insidious forms. I forgive them for being stupid, or I silently scold them for being so wrong. Once the idea takes hold that I'm dealing with someone who can't keep up, I want to leave the room. I'm bored with what they're going to say, and they seem so predictable that I want to scream. Then I'll think, how small-minded, how lacking in breadth. Or I'll bury their objections with 2 or 3 arguments from an opposite point of view. When they seem particularly stupid and hopeless, I know enough to take another look. How could a good friend suddenly look that bad? How could I be contemptuous of someone who only yesterday seemed so smart? What comes up is that I'm not totally right, then I must be totally off, and then I'm left with seeing them as really superior and myself as nothing in my own eyes. So the sevens, like I said, there are celebrators, and I'm finding that recently, like I said about this one friend of mine, the social director of our group, unless they're evolved. Let's see, I've said something. The famous sevens are monkeys and butterflies. Mm-hmm. They think that King Solomon is probably a seven. Mozart. Mm-hmm. And Francis of Assisi. So those are our sevens. Anybody got their own personal stories of either themselves or if they want to look in the mirror at somebody else?
I came into this thing figuring I knew who I was on this stuff. Now I don't know. Now I'm very unsure.
Do you find yourself just not being able to identify with any of them or all of them or just different ones at different times?
Several of them at different times, bouncing all around the spectrum.
Okay, I think that's healthy. Personal opinion.
Yes, but we all have one rock to stand on, okay? Supposedly.
Okay, there's the...
I thought I had them identified, and I don't think I did.
This is, I'm trying to read you one more thing, and I've carried this around with me the whole time I started doing the Enneagram, and I just love it. Just, the usual way to generate force is to create anger, desire, and fear. But these are dangerous sources of energy because they are blind, whereas the force of love springs from awareness and does not destroy its own aims. Now this is where, of being able to go to different ones, this is where this applies to. Out of love and the willingness to act, strategies and tactics will be created naturally from the circumstance of the struggle. Thus, the problems of strategy and tactics are of secondary importance. So, when we identify ourselves with one particular segment of the Enneagram, then we are basically in our ego dealing with it with strategies and tactics. And when we can move beyond that, then we use the appropriate behavior for the situation.
I can see very, very, you know, I'm 51 years old, I have a dozen extreme high stress situations in my life. And I've bounced around from one to the other, maybe being one for several months, and then got out of it, and then got into another high stress situation, somewhat different, and ended up very firmly in another one of these major dysfunctional areas.
Do you find that you're using the same tactics each time?
No.
And the resolution?
Five and six, I found major areas in there that I had used at times.
Yeah, my own personal experiences, I've said it was a heavy two, and I like to use the past tense, I was. When I moved out of being a two, I can remember now experiencing being the tragic romantic for a while. And at the same time, then going up and probably the time that I lived here at Holden, I was probably the perfectionist, living out an ideal, trying to create a vision. And this is something that I'm going to start talking about tomorrow. The whole concept of the movement, there is, looks a little scary when you first look at this, but as a two, there is, if I was in a place of real hard stress and the two wasn't working for me anymore, when you degenerate, you move backwards. That would be with these arrows. And when the two didn't work for me anymore, I became the boss. And I started annihilating everything in sight. I went into a real heavy-duty rage. I basically destroyed my kitchen. Tore the cupboards off the walls, broke the dishes. And it was pretty scary. I totally lost control. And from there, if I continued to degenerate, I'd probably go down into a five. And eventually, if I didn't turn into a hermit or a platonic. I mean, we're talking majorly dysfunctional here. Whereas on the other end of it, as a two, of moving out of that, recognizing what, with some help, by the way, moved into the four, the tragic moment, got in touch with my own feelings, got in touch with me, and then up and got a vision, went to the one, the perfectionist, but got a vision, and now I'm over here learning to play. See, so there's
is that,
movement.
Is that why, what is it, the nine, the six, and the three
They're kind of all their own cycle.
Connected with each other, and all of the other numbers are interconnected.
Right. The core group, for some reason, they've found that, and I haven't explored it yet, kind of evolve in their own little circle of movement. And so like the devil's advocate, at the same time, if they can get out of their paranoia, would probably move up and become the peacemakers, be able to mediate, and then go down and be able to be very active in the performing of it. Where on the reverse side of it, if they're degressing out of being a devil's advocate, if they went into performance from that mode, they would probably, like I said, we have the motorcycle gangs becoming active, but in a very negative sense, I think. So those are some of the things that I want to talk about tomorrow. And I think I have a little prayer that I want to do. And this will end us up. We're finishing up early. And then, if you guys want to kind of jump in the gun here, we want some more discussion on this, because I'd love to hear stories of other people. I've said if you had other experiences or anything like that, because when we tell our stories, other people can identify and feel like, you know, it's okay. This is where I've been, or this is where I am, and I'm really human. Gosh.
Yeah. I have more of a question, which I guess is my story. I was wondering about when you were talking about the woman with the biological clock and the hermit, and seeing it not as just an individual insight into at least a relationship, but not a whole community. If there is any characteristic way of the one finding the something or the two finding something, like, what I'm thinking of is the part that isn't there is often projected, the part that's unconscious is projected according to Jungian psychology. And people make characteristic mistakes. I think that one thing that Jung pointed out was henpecked husbands often divorce and marry another woman who will henpeck them, and now they'll divorce again and marry another one. That kind of aggression and insistence is something that they simply don't accept themselves and project outward and conjure it out there. Does that work in this? Can you take like a couple, or could you take a room full of people? You mentioned that you like to find the social director, and are there other people in your social group that fill out the whole cosmos? Let's say you got one of each. Or? And I think that one of the things that I know, to go back to Carl Jung, that he believed was that people don't evolve unless they have a good deal of solitude. That as long as they can be apart, as long as the dad can say, "You'll be the man of the house if you don't, I'll swat you," and individuals don't matter, it's sort of the group that has to carry on and the functions to carry on, and if there's blood all over the floor, that doesn't matter, because we don't care about personal development. And Jung seemed to feel that a certain withdrawal was necessary, that people had to get out of groups, that you couldn't stay in Basel, and or Gorgi, if you couldn't stay in wherever he was from Georgia, but you had to move out and be alone and be with other cultures who simply didn't know what your culture was all about if you were going to fill in the blanks.
I think that...
not that it would necessarily work, I keep interrupting you, I'm sorry. I mean, people could just go crazy if they were alone a lot. But they might evolve.
It's taken, for me, I know I've had periods, and I really try to take care of myself now in that area, and that is make sure that I have time for me, my own personal solitude time. I agree with you. I think it's really important for us to especially for myself, who I'm an extremely strong extrovert. I have to really force myself into solitude sometimes, because the easy way out is to go be with people. But at the same time, when I'm with people, I'm not in touch with me.
I need that alone time to get in touch with me. Find out who I am and where I am. And as far as your question about that, or statement about seeing it in other people, the example would be for me of a close friend of mine who is a four. We spent quite a bit of time together. I met her a year at Holden, and we spent quite a bit of time together when I first came to Holden. We seemed to have a lot in common. And again, I was seeing in her what I was looking for in myself. And now with the social director, I'm seeing in her what I'm wanting in myself. But I think that I'm mature enough now that when I'm alone, what is it about this person I'm attracted to? What am I looking for in me? And recognize that. And finding my lessons in her. And well, if you want to learn how to ride a bicycle, you watch somebody ride a bicycle first. And being able to get in touch with, how do I go about doing this? Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I've been at with that. Mm-hmm. It's just my own personal journey anyway. Okay. Well, let me finish up. I want to read all nine of them now. We've come a long way. All the way. Okay, this is the Litany of Freedom. I am, see if you can recognize this as I read it. I am free because with your grace I know I am part of your world and your process. I participate in your perfection. It is not up to me alone. I am free because with your grace I know it is you who saves the world. You save me. It is not up to me alone. I can relax. I am free because with your grace I know your world is unfolding according to cosmic laws. I can relax. I don't have to win at living. I am free because with your grace I know I can be intensely alive in the simplest moment. Because you are in that moment, I can relax and let life be life. I am free because with your grace I know you are watching over the world, so I can leave my lookout and plunge into living. I can relax knowing you will miss nothing. I am free because with your grace I know I can rely on you walking with me. I can relax. I will fear only what is actually fearful. I am free because with your grace I know you are in the reality of today, not the ideal of tomorrow. I can live in this moment instead of avoiding pain, avoiding what pain it may hold. I can relax in the now. I am free because with your grace I know only you can judge, because only you have the perspective as well as the power to make an unjust world just. I can relax. It is not up to me alone. I am free because with your grace I know I am loved and I am lover, because you have touched me with your love. Thank you.
What time is your class tomorrow?
6:15. That's right after dinner.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. I really enjoyed it. Great.